Well, do you have your income tax returns filed yet? Maybe you do. Larry Mueller here. Maybe you don't. I filed mine. Happy to have that task completed. But Steve Schmidt's with us to help if you haven't, and maybe to answer questions about potential tax savings for this year. Steve, a certified public accountant, managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, our guest today, with us by phone. Certainly, if you'd like to join in, you can call us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Steve, welcome back. Thanks for I know you're really busy this time of year.
Yes, it's our time of year. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, though, Larry.
Well, I appreciate having you. There's been an early sampling of tax returns received by the IRS this year, and about 15% of us have made mistakes involving what's known as the recovery rebate credit. What is that benefit?
Okay, I got to give you a little history to explain that. About a little over a year ago, an economic stimulus bill was passed, which included an economic stimulus payment. And the IRS automatically paid to you $600 for a single person, $1,200 on a joint return, and then $300 for each qualifying child. However, if your income was beyond $75,000 on a single return or $150,000 on a joint return, that credit was phased out. And it's possible people got nothing if their income was too high for 2007. So the IRS paid a credit based on your 2007 tax return. But in that tax law, there was a provision that says if you compute the credit for 2008 based on your 2008 income and you're entitled to more credit than what you received in the spring of 2008, then you could take the additional amount as a credit, as a recovery rebate credit on your 2008 return. So a real simple example, let's say a married couple, no kids, had $300,000 of income on their 2007 return. They weren't eligible for any rebate. Let's say the business took a downturn or their earnings took a downturn in 2008. They filed their 2008 tax return and only had $100,000 of income. Now they're under the income limit, so they're entitled to the full $1,200, so they can take the $1,200 credit on their 2008 return. So if you got the max in 2007, there's nothing more you can do on 2008. But if you didn't get as much as you're ultimately entitled to, you can claim that additional amount on your 2008 income tax return.
There you have it.
So
there you have it. Well, Chris in Mequon has a question for you, so let's go to Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Actually, I am going to get my wife to sign my 1040 because I'm sending it in. We're buying a new house. And I was interested in the first-time buyer's credit and the particulars with that.
Okay. All right. For the first-time home buyers, you cannot have owned a house within the prior 3 years. So if you've owned one longer than that ago, you can qualify for the credit, even though it really wouldn't be your first home. But you can't have owned a home within 3 years before closing on the house you're looking at buying. And the credit is 10% of the cost of the house up to a maximum of $8,000. The last year credit amount was $75,000, so under the new law, it's gone up by $500. Another important feature under the new law, if you keep the new house for at least 3 years, 36 months, you don't have to pay the credit back. Unlike those that took the $7,500 credit last year, they have to pay that credit back over pro rata over a 15-year period.
Okay.
So the form that you file is Form 5405, and there is a possibility that you can claim the credit on your 07 return or your 2008 return, even though you buy the home in 2009. You may want to get Form 5405 and the instructions to guide you on that.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Yes, and you get up to $8,000. So if you had a, if you buy, all right, let's say you spend $100,000 on a house, 10% of that would be $10,000. You could collect eight.
You only get eight as a max. But if you bought a $50,000 house, you'd only get $5,000.
Okay, gotcha. Joanne in Princeton, you are up. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm going to be building a new house this summer and installing geothermal heating system. And I understand that there's a 30% tax credit on that. Now, just how does that – I don't understand this tax credit business. How do I
– Sure. To figure that credit, you'll go to Form 5695. And the difference between a credit and a deduction reduces your taxable income. And so if you're in a 25% tax bracket, a $10,000 deduction saves you $2,500, 10,000 times 25%. On the other hand, a credit is a dollar-for-dollar reduction in your tax. So if you had a $10,000 credit for alternative energy expenditures, it would reduce your tax liability by $10,000.
Okay. It will be roughly a $6,000 tax credit, I think. It's going to cost
okay,
roughly $20,000.
Sure.
So anyway, but I don't pay that much taxes in a year. That actually comes right off of my income tax that I pay in, right? Is that what
yes,
you're telling me?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So,
if you are going to have a larger credit than your tax liability, I don't. Some credits carry over. I don't recall off the top of my head whether the residential energy credit carries over or not. I don't believe so, but you'd want to check that. And if it doesn't, if you have ways to accelerate your income into 2009 so you don't waste any of that credit,
right,
that might be a good strategy for you to consider. And, you know, if you have funds in IRAs, you could pull out some of the IRA if you're old enough so you don't have a penalty.
Oh, okay.
Or there might be other ways for you to defer deductions or accelerate income to utilize the credit in full. Since you're talking a pretty sizable credit, it might be worth a little professional help to get you the best result there.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah, thanks. Good news there for Joanne. Patty in Eau Claire is up next. By the way, you can join in. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Patty in Eau Claire now. Hi, Patty.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I had an interesting experience. Last year, I rented out my home. It was on the market for sale, but in September, I rented it out. And I took the equity in the house. I have had no mortgage on that house and bought a smaller home in Eau Claire. Now, when I was doing my taxes on TurboTax, I got new questions about rental property and stuff. And when I was done with it, it said that I actually got a refund of $175 or something, pretty much came out even. Now, I'm used to paying estimated taxes of about $3,600 a year, and I thought, something's wrong. So I double-checked, and I think what I did wrong is that I said that the renters had been in the property the full year,
and so
I changed it to 25% of the year because it wasn't till the last
quarter.
But then it took me back to about paying the same amount in estimated taxes. Now, that gave me a heads up. If I don't sell my house and I leave renters in that other house, can that significantly lower my taxes?
Sure. Was the house you're renting out previously your principal residence?
Yes.
It was. Okay. So, but when you have a rental property, you report the rent as income on Schedule E, and then you take all your expenses, such as insurance and real estate taxes and repairs and maintenance as deductions. And in addition to that, you're entitled to depreciate improvements to the property, the building and, you know, carpet, drapes, and cabinets and counters. And the depreciable life on the building itself is 27 and a half years, and for personal property, the drapes, counters, carpets, cabinets, counters, is a five-year double declining. So it's very common in with rental properties, particularly in the earlier years, that they'll throw off a rental loss. And if your income is low enough, that rental loss offsets other income. Now, the interest on that house wouldn't be deductible as rental interest because you didn't use the proceeds to buy the rental property.
Right.
You use it to buy another house. In your case, you need to be a little careful. Is in order to deduct mortgage interest, it has to be secured by the house.
I didn't do that.
Yeah, so but you may want to check that out. But certainly a rental loss would cause you to pay less tax.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Ooh, thank you very much.
All right. All right, Patty. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Roger in Manawa. Hello, Roger.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Last year, on April 1st, I made a contribution to my IRA that should have been credited to 2007.
Okay.
Okay. Yesterday, I was going to make a contribution for my 2008, and the rep said, you've already made one last year, that for some reason they mistakenly credited last year's payment to 2008, and that they have no record of a credit for 2007.
No.
Now, they say they can't change it, that I have to file an amended return and unclaim my contribution for 2007. My tax person says that would result in probably tax interest and a penalty, and that it wasn't my mistake, it was their mistake, and there should be some way for them to correct it.
I've not looked at that situation, but if you properly designated to them that your contribution in April of 08 was for 07, I think you want to go back to them and see if there's not a way that that can't be corrected. I've never looked at the situation. I haven't had it come up in my practice. And if there's a way to do that, I don't know why they wouldn't be able to file that information with the IRS. Just like you can amend your return, I don't know why they wouldn't be able to amend their reporting to the IRS of the contribution if they inappropriately put it in the wrong year. So I think you need to take a look at your facts. Did you, in fact, designate that as a 2007 contribution? And if they're wrong, I would expect there's a way that they can correct their reporting to the IRS.
To the IRS, sure.
Yes. So what I would, if you're using a tax professional, I would suggest you contact your tax advisor there and have him do whatever research he needs to see what the correction procedure is on behalf of the plan custodian and take the next step. If you properly identified it and they don't do a correction, you might want to pursue to see if there's any recourse against the company.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck. Thank you very much, Roger, for calling. Steve Schmidt, Certified Public Accountant and Managing Director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, with us today to answer your income tax questions. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone lines are full at the moment as we visit with Steve Schmidt. So let's go back to those telephone calls and on to Katie in Appleton next. Katie, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
We have a situation where we have a net operating loss.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that can be carried back 3 years. But I'm finding that Form 1045 hasn't been updated since last year. Do you know if there's been a change in that?
Yes,
part
I do.
Of the law?
The tax bill that was just passed, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, contains a new provision which, for eligible taxpayers, small businesses, allows you. Normally, the net operating loss carryback for federal is 2 years. Mm-hmm. What this new tax bill does, it lets you make an election, and you can carry it back 3, 4, or 5 years at your choosing by making an election on your 2008 tax return. There's the IRS a few weeks ago issued a revenue procedure that explains the election procedure and contains some information on determining whether you're eligible. That revenue procedure is 2009-19, and in order to be eligible to carry the losses back up to 5 years, it has to be the loss has to come from a small business, and that means your average annual gross receipts for the 3 years ending 2006, 7, and 8 cannot exceed $15 million.
I wish that was a problem.
Okay. So yeah, we'll leave it at that. But to make the election is fairly simple. You would basically simply say that taxpayer hereby elects under section, you ready to write this down?
Mm-hmm.
172, paren B, paren 1, paren capital H, to elect to carry back the 2008 net operating loss 3, 4, or 5 years as you choose.
And if I've already submitted my return, do I need to do an amendment?
Oh, I would, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Now, you want to check to make sure it's advantageous to go back longer.
Right.
I mean, because if you had lower income in those years and higher income for your normal two-year carryback, which would be 2006, you may prefer not to go back to the five, but you got to take a look at your particular situation to see what works best for you.
And then what form would I use to actually...
The 1045 is the correct form.
Okay, so even though that hasn't been updated since 2007, it's still the right form?
Yeah, because it should work, and you'll just... carry it back instead of to 2006. You could go back actually to 2003 if you went back the full 5 years, and you would just list that as the carryback year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you got to use all the other provisions of the 2003 tax law to compute your tax for 2003 as amended after carrying back the loss.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Katie, for calling. Appreciate your call. And on to an email. We have an email here from Lori. I was wondering what qualifications must be met to claim a child over the age of 18 as a dependent on your tax return. I'm assuming that being a student would qualify the child, but what else may have to be taken into consideration?
Okay. Basically, the parents would need to provide more than half the support. And the child would have to be a qualifying child, which is defined in the instructions. I don't intend to go over that on the air here.
Right.
A full-time student, which means more than, you know, at least a half credit or a normal load, would get you the full-time student status. So if you go to the IRS instructions, there's a whole series of flowcharts for if you go to the line 6C instructions.
Okay.
There's a whole flowchart that runs several pages that will walk you through the eligibility for the dependency exemption.
Perfect. All right, let's go to JJ in Neillsville. Hello, thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. Appreciate you talking to me.
Sure.
My question is... about that $600 stimulus check that everybody got last year?
Right. Yes.
Well, my girlfriend only got $300. And I was wondering if you knew any reason why that would happen. She only made like maybe $12,000 or $13,000 for the entire year.
There were limits. And whatever she got, she got. There's nothing you can do about it. All right? But if based on her 2008 facts, she's entitled to a larger credit, then you can claim that credit. I've got a Form 1040 in front of me here. I don't have a 1040A, but it's on line 70, the recovery rebate credit. And in the IRS instructions for package for Form 1040, and the form refers to it itself on page 62 and 63, there's a worksheet that you can work through to see if you're eligible for more credit on the 2008 return.
Yeah.
So you should just work through that worksheet and see if
she qualified
for the additional $300 credit.
Yeah, if she made $12,000, likely she would be.
I would think so.
Yeah, that's for sure. Good luck, JJ. Thank you. And on to Leo in Green Bay. Hello, thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. I have a question about the tax for converting a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. When the investment is in an annuity, and in the annuity there are two values. One would be the current cash value, and then one is a more of a contractual obligation associated with the annuity. Is there a set rule, IRS rule, in how they value when the transfer is made?
Well, I would call your custodian there and get the value that they would report out on the 1099-R to you when you made the conversion.
Okay.
Because that would be determinative of what they would report.
Got it.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Jennifer in Madison. Hi to you.
Hello. I have a question about the child care tax credit.
Okay.
My question is, I have a 5-year-old who's in preschool. My husband and I both work, but we work part-time, and I'm wondering if I can still take that credit. I was kind of confused by the instructions. It said if you're using it so that you can go to work, and we partially use it for that. So I wasn't sure if I could take that credit or not.
Yeah, it's only the child care for the time that you're undertaking care while you work.
Okay. So then we probably shouldn't take that credit.
Well, you could take the part that you're entitled to.
Say if you're working half time, you could take half the but the child is all day, you could take half the day then, couldn't you, Steve?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just need to figure out the percentage.
Sure. It's going to include the child care while you're working, but not child care while you're not working.
Okay.
All right.
All right, that makes sense. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. On to Nick in Wind Point. Nick, hello to you.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to get some clarification on that first-time homebuyer's credit I heard your guest mention a little bit ago. We purchased a home in April 2008, and I was under the impression we aren't eligible for that, but I thought I heard him say something about there was a $7,500 credit
in
2008.
What date did you buy in April 2008? What date did you close?
It was the 22nd of April.
You're eligible for the credit. It was April 9th.
Wow.
Of 2000.
Wow.
It was April 9th or after April 9th. I don't remember exactly one of those two dates. But it was, I think it was eligible. The original credit was scheduled to be eligible from April 9th, 2008 through June 30th, 2009. So you're within that window. And if you filed your return already, you should get Form 5405. And file an amended return and claim the credit if you want. As I mentioned earlier in the show, when another caller called, is that credit you got to pay back?
Okay.
So if you get the full $7,500 credit, starting in 2010, I believe you're going to have to pay back $500 a year.
Okay, but you had said something about if you live there for more than 3 years.
That's the new rule. That's not the. That's
oh, not
that's
for the
not
weight,
your
though.
Credit.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
so if I take it, I'm going to be paying it back.
So it's like an interest-free loan, so I don't know why you wouldn't want to claim it, but it's not an absolute give-me credit. It's one you got to pay back. It's like an interest-free loan.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Marilyn in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because my mother has given me a house. It's got a lot of work that has to be done on it, and I'm going to try to do as much as I can myself. I was going to get some windows from the Restore Place.
Sure.
And a lot of them are Energy Star, that type of thing, and getting appliances, that type. So how would I get my credit for that?
Okay, so you're buying Energy Star
windows and appliances.
Okay.
Okay. For 2009, the energy credit is back, and it's been expanded. And in the past, although it didn't apply for 2008, but for 2006 and 7, the credit was 10% of the cost of new materials. And then there were a bunch of limits with windows were limited and different things were limited. With 2009, the subcategory limits are eliminated. The credit rate percentage is increased from 10% to 30%, and the maximum credit is increased from $500 to $1,500. The credit is claimed on Form 5695, so you would take that credit when you filed your 2009 income tax return, and it would offset other tax liability that you would have, if any. And if you're buying used materials, they're not eligible for the credit. They have to be new.
I think they are new, but I think they were given to the restorer.
Okay, good. All right.
As long as they're new.
Yeah. But they haven't been used before?
Yes, excellent.
Okay. And another thing I wanted to ask, I forgot. My children, I got EEC credit. What do you call it?
Earned income credit?
Earned income credit. I got it last year because of I had filed, and then the IRS sent me a letter back saying, you know, maybe you could get the credit.
There's an additional child tax credit? Perhaps you're eligible for, and there's a form 8812 you would need to complete to see if...
Oh, 8812, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you have
okay.
it.
Okay, okay. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling, Marilyn. Appreciate it. And let's go to Tom in Madison next. Tom, hi to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Steve.
Hi.
Yeah, I hate to admit that I'm a Gladry alumni from 1977 through 1982.
Oh, really?
I'm currently retired. I screwed up on my federal return this year. First time ever. After I electronically filed it, 10 minutes later I'm going through and getting ready to do my state tax, and I find out that I left off a stock sale where I had a $1,200 loss and some dividend income of about $500. Now, my situation is do I want to file a 1040X right away, an amended return, or should I just go ahead and electronically file my Wisconsin return, including the homestead credit one, with the wrong federal information, since I already have that on a PDF file for my electronic filing.
If you haven't filed Wisconsin early. Yet, what I think I would do is I would file the amended federal return and file one correct Wisconsin return with the Department of Revenue.
Yeah,
but what I can't tell you is how your e-filings are using some type of tax package. I can't tell you how you would do that with your particular system, and you'll have to figure that out yourself.
Yeah, no, that... Yeah, the 1040X I'll have to do manually because they don't have the provision on the e-file.
Okay, and then you'll have the corrected forms with everything before you submit the e-file to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is, of course, you get your refund much faster if I e-file.
Right.
And I said, well, I can do the 1040Xs sometime this summer.
Right, I mean, why can't you just put the correct parameters in your tax system and then create the e-file that you send to Wisconsin with the correct information.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't allow me to go back in because
okay, then I don't know the logistics of your software. I mean, I can't help you out with that.
Can't help out with that part of it, though. So good luck, Tom.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call.
You know, maybe if you bought a new package or you reloaded it, maybe what you could do is, of course, when you e-file, it probably takes both the federal and Wisconsin. I don't know at the same time. So, yeah, I don't know the logistics of the software there.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks, Tom. Greg in Wauwatosa, on to you now. Hi, Greg.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. I've got a question about Wisconsin Form 1, Line 7.
Form 1, Line 7. What's that line?
And that is United States government interest.
Okay.
So one of my kids cashed in some savings bonds from Grandma, the late 60s and 70s, so forth, $309 worth. And she did that last year, too, and I reported it as income. But I noticed this year that it might be exempt.
Okay. U.S. interest is taxable on the federal return, but it's exempt on Wisconsin. And as you pointed out, there is a line to subtract U.S. Right. Treasury interest on the Wisconsin return.
So what is the amended form? I always have trouble.
1X.
1X. You think you can download that?
Yes, you go
so
to...
So much easier.
Hang on, I can give you the website here. Address, favorites. Yeah, or you could just, you know, search for Wisconsin Department of Revenue, but I can pull it up here. It's www.dor.state.wi.us. And on the left-hand side, there's some dialog boxes. One of those is forms. Click on that, and should take you where you need to go.
Right. I'm going to do that for last year. Thank you so much. I love the show, guys.
All right. Thanks
You're
a lot
welcome.
For calling, Greg. And on to some more callers here. How about Chris in Watertown? Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Great. So I have a question. My family, we purchased a farm a couple of years ago, and we bought a few livestock just as a hobby thing, and we've decided we want to take that a step further and actually breed these sheep and then sell them in the fall. And I'm wondering just how do I go from being what's referred to as a hobby farmer, how do I actually make that as a viable business that I can then start, you know, making deductions and so forth?
Well, yeah, it's basically... what your intent is, you know, manifested by your actions. So if initially it was just a hobby and now you're going to go for it for making a profit, then you would file Schedule F with your tax return. You would report all your income and deductions there. And, you know, be sure to keep adequate records of your income and expenses. But that's the form that you would use.
All right.
Was that a schedule form, Schedule F?
Schedule F.
I mean, that's a federal form?
That's a federal form.
Are there other requirements or for the state form?
What happens is that Schedule F income will go to page one of your, or loss, will go to page one of your Form 1040, which will be included in your adjusted gross income, and then the starting point for your Wisconsin return is federal adjusted gross income. So there's nothing more you need do on Wisconsin other than bring forward your federal adjusted gross income, and the Schedule F is included. If you paper file, of course, you file a complete copy of your federal return with your Wisconsin return, which gives Wisconsin the same Schedule F that's filed with your federal return. So there's nothing separate you need to do.
Okay. So, I mean, is there a rule as far as, you know, there won't be profitability. We had a lot of and a lot of outlay, you know, in these initial years to get the livestock and the fencing.
Sure. And that's not uncommon in new businesses. But the real key is that you're undertaking the activity, the farming, the raising of the sheep or whatever, with the profit motive that you're, and it's not just a hobby. You're in it to make a buck, so to speak, as opposed to...
Okay. So yep. it's my intent as much as anything.
Yeah, yep. Good.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Someone called in.
Maybe I should have said a ram rather than a buck. Huh?
Well, let's see. For the person whose IRA filing went in the wrong year,
yes.
Someone phoned in and said that his tax preparer could submit a 5498.
Well, that's the form that the custodian company reports to the government and the IRA owner, indicating the value of the IRA and the contributions made by year. So, but that is the form, and that's the form that I was alluding to that the IRA custodian should correct.
Gotcha. All right. Let's go to Barb in Portage. And by the way, we have some open lines again, finally, so you can get on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 with your tax question or email at talk@wpr.org. Now on to Barb in Portage. Barbara, hello.
Hi. This is concerning Form 1A for Wisconsin filing.
Sure.
Line 10 for medical care insurance deductions. In January of 2008, I had two employers. From one, I was purchasing insurance pre-tax and left that employment in January. So from February through December, I used COBRA.
Okay.
And paid for it post-tax. And I continued to have the second employer. Now, doing the worksheet, The questions, I'm not sure if I'm going to be taking the full amount or a partial. The first question is the amount I paid during a period in which I had no employer. I did not have the insurance employer from February to December, but I had
you,
the
You
other.
Still were working for somebody else.
I was, but I elected not to do their insurance, and
mm-hmm.
I never had.
Right.
So I continued with the COBRA.
Right. Okay. So that one should qualify you for the 100% deduction.
Okay.
For that period of time.
When my employer did not contribute.
Right.
So I'm just regarding it as one employer. I didn't have an employer paying, and so I can use the 11 months.
Right.
And I know I can't do January because it was pre-tax dollar.
That's correct.
Okay, wonderful. I like your answer. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Here we've got a little bit of a conundrum. Dave emailed in to say his wife is disabled. He received disability payments from the insurance company for $23,000 and change, and they withheld $1,800.
In federal tax?
Apparently. Then a year later, Social Security was received, and he had to pay back the insurance company the $23,000.
Mm.
So he wants to know how to report this.
Yeah. There's two ways to do it. One is to take a current year deduction, which probably isn't advantageous. And then it's too complicated to give you the details on the radio here. But there's a section of the Internal Revenue Code that's called Claim of Right. He thought that income was his.
Yeah.
And he reported it in 2007, let's say, or yes, and now had to pay it back. And as long as the amounts that you paid back exceed $3,000, there's an advantageous way to calculate it by effectively what you do is you recompute your tax for that prior year and you get that tax back. I'm going to give you a code section. It's section 1341. That's the code section that authorizes that. So this is something I deal with very infrequently, and Wisconsin has the same provision. So find the claim of right provisions in both the federal and Wisconsin instructions and apply those, and you'll get a very equitable and fair result. It's you'll get the tax back on the amounts that you included in income that you thought was yours that turned out not to be.
Steve Schmidt, our guest today, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, as we talk taxes with him here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls now as we talk taxes with Steve Schmidt. Chase in Wausau is up next, so let's go to Chase. Hi, Chase.
How are you folks doing today?
Good.
Good. Hey, I have a question about filling out my HSA form. I think it's form 8889.
That's mm-hmm. health savings account, okay.
Yes, correct. My wife actually gets money put into her HSA, and that's pre-taxed. And my question to you is we took out $1,500 for, of course, medical expenses from that HSA account. Do I put that on line 2 or do I put 0? Because I'm not quite sure if I understand that form too well.
Okay, line 2 is for the contributions you make out of pocket.
That's what I thought, okay.
I think lower on the form, there's a place where you report distributions.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also report your qualifying expenses to prove you don't have to include anything in income because you use the distributions for qualifying medical expenses.
Okay. So, for instance, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but for instance, if I took, $500 out of my pocket and put into that account, I would put that on line 2 because that is actually...
No. You did what?
I'm saying if I took money out of my own pocket...
For the contributions to the HSA.
Yes.
Yes, right.
Okay, so line 2, I didn't take any money out of my own pocket, but it was pre-tax, so I put 0.
Right.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Mary in Oshkosh next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My sister is getting divorced in August, and her tax advisor has advised her that for 2009, she'll have to file single because she'll be single as of December 31st. But that her ex-husband will be able to claim or take credit for 50% of the withholding that occurs through August.
Your sister lives in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Wisconsin's what's called a marital property state, and while you are married, it's not my income or your income, it's our income. And the income that's marital income, along with deductions that are paid out of marital income and withholding from marital income, gets split 50-50 through the date of divorce. So that is correct.
So he would have to actually claim half of her income, though, as his income as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. And she claimed half of his income in withholding.
Well, and he's self-employed, so there's pretty much... It's a loss,
but the same thing would apply. Now, you can enter into an agreement reclassifying income as non-marital, in which case, then after that agreement becomes effective, each party reports only his or her income. But I would suggest, you know, you have your sister consult with her divorce lawyer on that issue. They should be very knowledgeable on that.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks very much for calling, Mary. Roger and Gordon, your turn now. Hi, Roger.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've got a question on a 1099-C cancellation of debt.
Okay.
I got a 1099-C from a bank in New York and for 2008. The debt was actually canceled in 2005, and I had a letter from the bank, so I faxed them the letter back. And they said they made a mistake, that they could not cancel the 1099-C for 2008. Well, I talked with them again, and they said yes. And they sent me a letter, said they canceled it, but they never sent me a corrected 1099-C for 2008. And I have yet to receive a 1099-C for 2005. I don't want to file amended 2005 until I get the correct figure from them. Do I trust them on the 2008 that they did change it, or?
I don't know. If they hadn't filed the 1099C with the IRS yet, you know, they could have just deleted it from the file, and you would not get a corrected 1099 because there'd be nothing to show. But what I would do is just ask them for a letter confirming that. And then if that's the case, then go ahead and amend your 2005 return to take into account whatever the appropriate tax consequences are from the cancellation of debt in 2005 based on your circumstances back then. To amend your return, if you filed a return on it before April 15th, 2006 for 2005, there's a three-year federal statute of limitations, so you've got just a little over 2 weeks left to file an amended return for 2005 under the normal statute of limitations. Wisconsin has a four-year statute, so you've got a whole year there yet on Wisconsin.
Well, I got another question. The 2008 1099-C they sent me, the numbers that are on there say are going to be different than 2005 because they held the account open and had...
They added accrued interest to it or something?
Charges and stuff, which should not have been there. So I can't do anything until I get something from them, I guess.
Well, yeah. So follow up with them and get the correct information, and then amend your 2005 return accordingly.
Yep, and time is short, so they probably even an email on this situation from the bank would probably suffice, I would think.
Sure.
Good luck, Roger. Thank you. Justin in Whitewater, on to you now. Hi, Justin.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I had a quick question for you guys. I am just wondering if you could help me figure out what I would do for the best filing status claim, you know, doing like either a zero or a one at the beginning of the year. I always claim zero and end up paying, in, you know, over $1,000 into, you know, after my taxes are being filed.
Do you have multiple jobs?
I have two jobs, yes.
Yeah,
I work on the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's probably why. So,
okay, I mean, between both jobs, I only work with the second job part-time, you know, 16 hours every 2 weeks. But between both those jobs, I only clear just over $30,000 a year, but always, then, you know, having to pay in, even claiming zero at both jobs.
Yeah, and if you don't like that result, you know, you can... continue to claim zero, and then If you get paid, do you get paid every week or?
Every 2 weeks.
Every two weeks. So there's 20, let's say there's 25, 26 pay periods. So you're short, $40 a pay period. So if you can ask them to withhold an additional $40 per pay period, so you kind of get closer to break even when you file your return.
Okay, so it does, I mean, that's why basically two jobs is kind of messing me up here.
Right.
Okay. All right, well, appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. And, of course, we're not going to get into it much here, but one way to maybe deal with that a little bit is to put some into a tax-deferred annuity of some sort.
You just put it in a savings account. You know, put the $40 a paycheck in the savings account, earn a little bit of interest on it, and you have it available when you file. But I didn't mention, but there's a Form W-4 that he would file with the employer to request the additional withholding.
W-4, okay.
Mm-hmm.
John in Rib Lake, on to you now. Hi, John.
Question with regard to the newest stimulus package. My wife and I both work, and wages were subject to withholding. We're getting a little bit more or less withheld now, more spendable income.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going to impact at the end of the year our return?
Yeah, that's
refund.
The new Making Work Pay Credit, and it's $400 per person if your income is low enough. So what will happen is the employer is just reducing withholding based on revised withholding tables they received from the IRS. And then the 2009 return will have a credit computation where you'll just simply compute the credit you're eligible for on your 2009 return, claim that credit against your tax and compare that to what's been withheld, and you'll have a refund or tax due accordingly.
Okay, so all things being equal, my refund is probably going to remain about the same.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling. And Sally in Potosi, on to you now. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have a question which I think is charitable giving. I play organ in church one Sunday a month without pay.
Uh-huh.
Can that be added to what I do give to the church?
No, ma'am. The value of services, although it certainly is a contribution, is not a deductible contribution. You have no basis in it. You included nothing in income, so there's nothing to deduct. So although it's a charitable thing to do, there's no contribution deduction allowed for that on your tax returns.
Could she deduct, let's say she has to drive 10 miles?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. The mileage, right, at 14 cents a mile, you could deduct. Good point, Larry. Yeah, going to and from church or to practice would be charitable mileage, which you could deduct.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Someone wondered, a small business owner wondered, if you could define tax write-off, in quotes, tax write-off for small business people.
Well, I think tax write-off is just another name for a deduction, and for somebody that has that they're in their own business, self-employed, it would be business expenses that they pay. That's what tax write-off means to me. And same thing if you're not in business but you're an itemizer, the interest I pay on my home mortgage is a tax write-off. I mean that's
yeah. Absolutely. Billy emailed us and says he was a flood victim and received flood relief money from religious organizations, wonders how to report that. Also, some appliances were replaced.
Generally, welfare-type payments aren't taxable, and it sounds like that's kind of what he received. Now, on the property, if he receives some replacement property, if it were income, I don't know that it is, but again, it's like welfare, but he may have a casualty loss deduction that might be claimed on his 2008 return. If you're in the Midwest casualty zone, and you have to, there's various dates which you got to go to Form 4684, and it actually takes you to the FEMA website. And for Wisconsin, the Midwest disaster dates is kind of like June 5th through July 25th, 2008. There's some special deductions allowed individuals for casualty losses. Normally, a casualty loss, there's a $100 floor, and then it has to exceed 10% of your income, and it's only the excess of that 10% that's deductible. If you have a Midwestern disaster area casualty, neither of those limits apply, and the loss is fully deductible to the extent it's reimbursed for by insurance. If you itemize, you take it as an itemized deduction. If you don't itemize your deduction, new for 2008 is you can increase your standard deduction by qualifying disaster losses.
Excellent. All right. Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your tax return today with Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Steve with us by phone today. Pretty busy guy these days as we draw near that April 15th deadline. But I tell you what, I'm glad to have him along. And Daryl in Milwaukee's up with a question, so let's go right to Daryl. Daryl, hello.
Hey, great program, guys.
Thanks.
The last year's stimulus check is, I thought that wasn't supposed to affect your last year's taxes any, but I'm using TurboTax and I'm putting it in and I'm owing money because of that. Was my, you know, perception of this, that it wasn't supposed to affect that, wrong?
Your perception is correct. And basically, if you got a credit and it was right, you keep the check. If you receive the check and it's more than you would be entitled to based on your 2008 facts, you still get to keep the check. There's nothing more you need to do. There's no payback. On the other hand, if you received less in the advance payment than what you're entitled to based on your 2008 facts, then you may claim an additional credit on your Form 1040 on line 70, and there's a worksheet in the instructions for you to compute that. So it's not going to cause you to pay more, but if you didn't get as much credit as you are ultimately entitled to based on your 2008 facts, you can take a credit on your 2008 return.
Well, when I put the $600 credit in...
Is what you received?
Is what I received, and it changed my tax because I originally thought that we had gotten $300. I put in $600, and I went from... They owed me $112 to now I owe them $188.
Yeah.
Well, the reason being is because if you initially put in less credit than what you actually received and were entitled to, your program was giving you additional credit on your return, all right?
Okay.
But you corrected it because you got the full $600,
right.
And accordingly, it was removing the credit on your return, which you weren't entitled to, so of course your tax would go up because you were claiming a credit on the tentative return when you shouldn't have.
Gotcha. All right, there you have it. Thanks, Daryl. Dorothy in Presque Isle, on to you.
Hi, Larry. Good program as usual. We're listening down here in Nine, Florida at 92 degrees.
Oh, wonderful.
Sounds tough.
Throw that in.
Well, how can we help you, Dorothy?
I have a question on the homestead credit. Neighbors of ours down here who are also from Wisconsin mentioned that, oh, they took their taxes in and they're allowed to claim the homestead credit. And I know their income, everything else is much more than we are.
Yeah, the homestead credit, if your household income is less than, oh, it's about $24,000. I don't remember the number exactly. And when you add household income, you got to include non-tax Social Security and certain other amounts that may not be taxed. And if your total household income is less than that, then you may be eligible for the Wisconsin Homestead Credit. And you claim that on Wisconsin Schedule H.
I guess, and that was my question, is do we have to put in the total amount that we got from Social Security? Because that blew us out right there.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yes.
Yep, you have to put that in.
Okay, so, all right, so, and I got to figure out how they did it then.
Well, sure.
We'll be back soon.
All right, thanks. In the meantime, enjoy yourself in Florida, Dorothy. Oh, boy. Ann in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I
I'm not sure if I want to be on the radio, to be honest, because I would like to, it to be somewhat confidential. I didn't know it.
I can tell you, you look great.
You have an ethical question? Is that the deal?
Well, okay. In 2008, I elected a certain amount of money to be put into my flexible spending account.
Okay.
For 2009. Now, I'm no longer working for that employer, and I understand that if I claim this amount that it will be paid, because that is the law, but those pre-tax dollars have not come out of my checks. So do you understand what I...
Sure, I think I understand what you're saying. It's basically, let's say somebody gets paid once a month and has $100 withheld for the flexible spending account, and that's $1,200.
Yeah.
And in January, they have a $1,200 claim. They get reimbursed by the employer.
Yes.
The employer reimburses that, but only $100 has been withheld.
Yes.
Right. That's the way it is.
No.
So you effectively, if an employee leaves, you can get ahead of the employer.
Yes, and I'm kind of just struggling with the ethical part.
Yeah. I'll leave that up to you. Because you're getting reimbursed for something that wasn't withheld. You do what you think is right.
Okay. There you go, Ann.
All right, that helps me.
All right. Thanks.
On the other hand, it works the other way. Is if, let's say, that employee had $1,200 withheld.
Yeah.
And used absolutely none of it. And if you don't use it by the end of the year, or now it can be as late as March 15th of the following year, if you don't use it, you forfeit it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing the employer can do to give it back to you, even if it wants to. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, but it can work against the employer or for the employer, or the same thing for the employee. So
there you have it. All right, Ann. Think about it. Robert and Madison, you're up. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you? I'll go straight for my question. I'm a truck driver. In early January of 2008, I purchased my own tractor. And at the end of November, the tractor broke down. And now I am currently working as a company driver. Now, I wasn't able to get the tractor working again. And so it's going to be a total loss. I don't have enough money to repair it. Is there anything tax-wise that I could do to, help with that loss?
Yeah, this is a little technical, but if you have business property, that you were using for business, which driving truck would be in your case, and then you abandon it from a business use, in your case, because of a malfunction or whatever, you can take an abandonment loss and you write it down to estimated recoverable or scrap value. So, that's the way you would approach it, through an abandonment loss.
Abandonment loss? Okay, uh-huh. up to what amount?
Let's say you pay $10,000 for it, you used it, and the most you're going to get for it right now is $4,000. And you took it out of service from your business because it was no longer usable. So you would, to the extent, let's ignore depreciation, okay? So you had a cost of $10,000. It's now worth $4,000. So you'd take an abandonment loss, an ordinary loss of $6,000.
There you have it. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Robert. I had an email in regarding the credit for window replacements. Not all Energy Star certified windows qualify for the tax credit, so buyers should do some due diligence.
You need to meet the standards for the property to be eligible for the credit. That's correct.
Yep. And then someone else emailed, the farmer setting up his business, as you said, should follow Schedule F. And they also mentioned that the Farm Service Bureau has some books that could help the farmer.
Oh, yeah, interesting. The IRS, too, has a publication for farmers. It's a fairly extensive one. I don't remember the publication number, but, yeah, there's a publication by the IRS as well.
Ed in Chippewa Falls volunteers at a local nonprofit hospital. He knows he can't take a deduction for his time, but can he take a deduction for the miles he drives to and from?
Absolutely, and the charitable mileage rate is quite low right now. It's 14 cents a mile, but that's the rate that you get for deducting charitable mileage if you itemize your deductions.
Paul in Big Bend up next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good afternoon. First-time caller. I enjoy your program immensely. I pulled over to the side of the road. I'm looking at my Form 1 Wisconsin income tax package here, and I'm looking at line 11. And I see for the very first time I can take a subtraction on my wife's payments on Part B. She's been disabled since 1993. I've been doing my taxes since I've been 16 years old in 1963. And I know that I can take that subtraction.
You're talking about medical care insurance.
That's correct.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, sir. Now, my question to you is, do I have to go back all of those years to do amended tax forms?
Okay, that for people that don't have any coverage, are you working?
No, I've been retired for the past 4 years.
Last year was the first year you had the Wisconsin subtraction. It was about 33% last year, and for 2008, when I say last year, I mean 2007, and for 2008, it's 66.7%.
I take that percentage of what she paid.
Yes.
As a subtraction,
right.
I understand. Okay.
There's a worksheet in the instructions that you
Got
should
it.
Refer to, and 2007, would be relevant for you as well. If you multiply it by a third times 6.75%,
yes.
I'm not sure it's worth amending, but you can do the math and see what you think.
Mm-hmm. All right.
6.75 is the Wisconsin highest.
So I can go back and do an amended for 2007, but not beyond that.
Right.
Got it.
So let's say you had $2,000 times 0.33 times 0.0675. You know, it's $42. So it's about $21 for every $1,000 of insurance.
Wonderful. Listen, Larry, you do a fantastic job. You always sound like you're smiling. Keep up the great work.
All right, Paul. Thank you very much for your call. Here we have an email from a physician. Can a physician take a deduction in a situation where the patient doesn't pay for their bills even after repeated collection attempts?
Okay, if the physician uses the cash method of accounting and only includes in income amounts received, then there is no bad debt deduction for amounts not received because nothing's been included in income. Does that make sense, Larry?
Yep.
Okay.
There you have it. Brooke in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Brooke.
Hi there. I always put in the maximum amount in a Roth IRA. I was told that was a wise thing to do, but last year we sold our dairy cows, and so I made like one-third the income, just part-time work this year. And my tax accountant, I still had money to put into the Roth, and he said I had to take out a lot of that because I didn't make enough. Now, even at the bank, they never had heard of that, so I'll hang up, and if you'd please comment.
Sure. In order to make IRA contributions, you have to have earned income, wages, or self-employment income. So the contributions to the IRA cannot exceed the amount of your wages and self-employment income.
Okay. So something you could do for, let's say you had a child who was working and made, let's say, $2,000 a year or for the year. Could the whole $2,000 go into a Roth?
Yes, it could.
Boy, that's a really good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
absolutely.
Really good deal.
Right.
Bill in Prescott, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good.
Thank you for an excellent program here. I had a quick question that was just kind of bothering me a little bit. In regards to investments, profit and losses, after you cancel out all your losses against your gains,
you're talking capital gains and losses.
Yes, capital gains
mm-hmm.
and losses for investment purposes with stocks and bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Would the um, um, sh- Should I question my accountant about taking the maximum $3,000 loss and actually only receiving about 10% reduction in my monies that I owe the state and the Fed, basically. The figure was about a $7,200 loss on a company that went bankrupt.
Okay. A capital loss, capital losses on your federal return are limited to $3,000.
Correct.
And then on the Wisconsin return, they're limited to $500. So on your Wisconsin return, you actually have a $500 or a $2,500 addition to income, because you took the $3,000 loss on the federal return. Now, tell me about the company. Was it a small company?
Lehman Brothers Holdings, unfortunately.
Oh, no, okay. All right. So, no, that'd be a capital loss. So, yeah, it sounds like it's done correctly.
Okay, no. So that only that 10% reflection should be approximately right. See, I was under the assumption that it was possibly related to your... Well, thank you for clearing that up.
Sure. All right, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Ann in Waterville, Iowa. Your turn. Hi, Ann.
Oh, hello. After all these serious questions, mine sounds kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I'm a dairy farmer, and I have been writing my deductions down, and I'm wondering, should I be taking a deduction for the tax, the sales tax, that I pay on certain items that I'm using on the farm?
Well, you do, because just include those items in the cost of what you're buying and deducting. Say you go out and buy some supplies for $100 and you pay $5 of sales tax, you would simply deduct as supply expense $105, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then for personal expenditures, as an itemized deduction, you can deduct the higher of sales tax or your state income tax.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And but on your business side, or the farm side, you just include that in the total cost of the items and deal with it accordingly.
Great. I've been wondering about that for years.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had the audacity to ask.
Yeah.
Other question, other statement is for the farmer that's beginning the farm, there are also, through your extension office, wonderful record books.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's exactly right. Thank you for reminding us, Ann.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. That's a good reminder.
UW has one of the better extension programs out there, too,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Bob has bonds put away years ago, 1987, for a kid's education, and put them away in both my name or my child's name. I have another child in college full-time. If I cash bonds now using my Social Security number for tax purposes, is there any exemption or deduction for earned interest I can apply against tuition costs next year?
Yeah, there is. I assume you're talking federal savings bonds. Yes, if you have a limited income, there is an exclusion that may apply. So he can check that out. It's one that actually I've never... had anybody hasn't applied in my practice, but yes, and it takes your income's got to be quite low. But education savings bond kind of concept, yes, there is an exclusion. And of course, if it's federal savings bonds, U.S. savings bonds, that interest is exempt on Wisconsin.
John in Schofield, your turn. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You were just talking to the lady about IRAs a couple calls ago, and I was wondering, I'm retired. Semi-retired, I work a little bit, not a whole lot, but I do get a fairly decent pension. Is that pension payment, can that be applied toward my IRA limit, or is it just...
No, it's got to be earned income. Okay. A pension would not be eligible income for making an IRA contribution.
Okie doke. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Ben in Madison, to you now. Hi, Ben.
Yes, I have a question regarding winning in casino. I am aware of gambling winnings are taxable. However, if you had losses in the same year, the winnings can go against the losses. And
as an itemized deduction.
Hello?
Yes.
As an itemized deduction.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
However, my question is different. I won in a blackjack tournament, which is actually an award, not a gambling winning. However, while I'm paying taxes on this, I appeared about 15 times and won once. Every time the entrance fee was $30, would that be, can be used against the winning of that award?
No.
Yes, sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
How do I fill it in?
Put that as a gambling. Is that a gambling earnings? You get it like a 1099 or WWG
no,
or something on that?
It is not showing up as a gambling winning, but miscellaneous.
Miscellaneous.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, then take your out-of-pocket expenses against that income and report the net.
Yeah, and out-of-pocket expenses would include your expenditures for getting in those tournaments.
Yes.
Yeah, they would. There you have it. Paul and Nina, hello.
Good morning or good afternoon. Say one has a small business, a sole proprietorship for an S corporation, and each year I give my I gift my three children $12,000 as it is right now, and put it into a checking savings account for them, and then turn around and create a promissory note for the three children, 12 times three.
So they lend the money to the corporation.
And then pay interest at the above the IRS a minimum rate or higher, and put that into their savings account for college, and just accrue these promissory notes, which would be a benefit upon death. Now you could do this ongoing. It wouldn't have to be every year, but you could do this over time, and you could actually each child could build this thing up into 40, 50, 60, you know, up into the high tens of thousands of dollars. It's totally legitimate, as I understand it. You concur?
Sure. You can gift cash to your kids, and they can lend that to your company, mm-hmm. and then you pay them interest. I would just share one thing that's new with you on the Wisconsin front. For 2008, there's Wisconsin Schedule RT, where you report interest payments to related parties, and your children would be related parties to the S corp. And if the total related party payments exceed $100,000, you have to file Schedule RT. If it's less than that, you still need to do on your S corp return an addition and a subtraction on your Schedule Ks and K1. So just watch for that.
All right, there you have it. And let's see. Quick question from Jerry. Hi, Jerry in Green Bay.
Yes, LLC with conservation easement credits. The length of time you can carry those forward, if you can only use 50% of my adjusted gross income per year.
So you're talking the charitable contribution deduction.
Yes.
Yes, not credits. So contributions in excess of the limit carry forward for 5 years.
There you have it. Thank you very much for calling. And, Steve, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It's a great pleasure. Good luck with the rest of your tax season.
Thank you much.
And we'll talk soon. Thanks,
Steve.
Okay,
Larry. Goodbye.
Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. And he comes by several times a year to talk with us. This was kind of his last one before the big date when we all have to have our income taxes in. But he does a wonderful job, and I really appreciate having him with us. And he'll be back probably next fall, and we'll do this all over again with him. But tomorrow, Scott Craven comes by to pay a visit, and he's feeling that spring in the air. So I hope you do, too. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Net.